everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths, and today's Real Talk is with a real leader who is disrupting the VC space. And folks, when she was introduced to me, she was actually described as a bit of a unicorn, and I have to say, I agree. Himalaya Rao Putlapalli is joining us. She was introduced, I always give you context, she was introduced by a dear friend of mine who was also on the show, Pilar Terry. Who is a founder of her PR and communications agency, POV agency. And so Himalaya was introduced again. She is, as I said, disrupting the VC space. I'm gonna do this quick introduction and I'm gonna turn it over to you, but she's GM of the Black Founders Matter Fund, which we'll probably call in here the, I'm gonna say it right, the BFM fund. And she's also, which I've learned as we started talking this morning, she's also running a nonprofit called Venture Partners. I told her, like, in her spare time, air quotes. So hence the unicorn description truly fits. So Himalaya, thank you so much for joining. I am so excited to have you and truly, as I said, fascinated by what you're doing.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And again, I really appreciate the ability to share the story, and I hope that it encourages more people to join this space, more people to go after whatever dream they have.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I think especially during this crazy time that we've been in for, I mean, these past few years where there's so many of us who've been reinventing who they are, and a lot of times that does mean you're going to start something new. And how do you start something new if you're from an underrepresented, segment of society and don't have the funds? So, I just think it's such a timely discussion, but also such needed work. So I also want to pause for a second because I didn't say Himalaya is award-winning. And when I say award-winning, I know I'm going to embarrass you, but I have to do this for the audience. I'm going to read this. So pardon me if you're watching this and my eyes divert. She's recognized as one of the rising stars in VC by the NVCA Venture Forward, recently selected as one of the 12 2022 VCI Fellows. She's invited by Senator Wyden to present expert witness testimony in front of the United States Senate Finance Committee on her work with BIPOC founders. I'm going to keep going, just a couple more. She was the first woman of color in Oregon's traditional venture capital ecosystem. The first woman of color to launch her traditional venture capital fund in Oregon, leading to the creation of employment and leadership opportunities for more women of color in the state. And she was the fund, boasts some notable LPs with the State of Oregon, Oregon Community Foundation, and Oregon Sports Angels. And so, I don't usually do that with my guests, Himalaya, so thank you for allowing me to do that. But I think that especially in this space, if there's people who are in the audience and they're listening and they don't have that much background with it, I just wanted to give the context to, the impact you're truly making and being recognized for. And I think that, this just helps to paint the picture. So like I said, thank you for allowing me to do that. Can you, again, just in case those who are listening, have never heard of it, can you start by laying the foundation of what is the fund and what is the impact that you're focusing on making?
Absolutely. So the BFM fund is a traditional venture capital fund with a few different differences so that we can amplify the impact. So the BFM fund focuses on Black entrepreneurs across verticals within the United States. And we invest in those entrepreneurs to be able to help them scale and to be able to scale to a point where they might exit or go public. And one of the other unique things beyond focusing primarily on Black entrepreneurs is that we are run by a full women of color leadership team. And I think that it's really important for us. We organically focus on the intersection between race and class. And so it's really important for also our team not to just be a full women of color leadership team, but for each of us to come from different socioeconomic, educational, and experiential backgrounds so that we can bring that to the table and have a more differentiated outlook.
Yeah, I think that's so important, especially from what I know, and you obviously know space way more than I do. But you've said traditional, but it also makes me think of traditionally VC space has been dominated by white males, from what I understand. And it has been very, very difficult, I believe, for women, people of color, especially if you represent, several of those areas of society. So, can you talk a bit about that and about, and I think it's great what you said is like the people who are running your business actually have different perspectives. So you can probably help those founders really in unique ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that representation is so critically important. And I do a lot of these talks on like how to build equitable companies. And I always go into this like, it's not the demographic diversity is the floor, but we can't just stop there, right? We need to ensure that people have diversity also on their education, on their socioeconomic background, on their perspectives. Because if we bring people, regardless of cultural background, into one room and they all source their information from one area, then we actually, and they process information all in the same way, then we actually won't have the full spectrum of diversity. And that's not to say, again, that demographic diversity isn't the floor. I think when you have these cultural and other like age and gender differences, it's really, really critically important because that's also our frame of reality is sometimes shaped by those identities and how we experience the world, how we're received by the world, what we think are realities, what we think are pain points and solutions are oftentimes dictated by those demographic diversity. So it's really important for that to remain as the floor and to also have representation because we all inherently have a bias. But if we can get more representation on the funder side, that when we can also create more representation and equitable decision making for founders. And so that's why it's really important for us to be representative of the people that we serve and the broader representation of those we serve. So our main fund focuses on Black and innovative entrepreneurs, but then we have a series of initiatives in which we help different BIPOC communities to thrive, both founders and funders.
Got it, got it. I was actually looking at your site and I was interested in those initiatives. Can you talk a bit more about that? And partly this is so that as people are in the audience and they're hearing this, maybe there are people who are perking up because we do have quite a diverse audience and maybe people are going like, oh wait, maybe there's something in here for me. So I would love for you to talk a bit about more about those initiatives if that's possible.
Sure. And I will say that this is like super different than I think most traditional venture capital funds because, and this is something that I talk to founders a lot. Most traditional venture capital funds, even if they focus on a specific demographic or rather like a geographic or industry, vertical, most, like the main focus of it is wealth management, right? And so individuals who are looking at venture capital funds are looking at them as like angel investors, but angel investors and VC funders are very, very different and have different motivations, different intentions, different things that they have to look to. But one of the things that we realized is, so my background is that I have a master's in social work before I got my MBA. And so a lot of my first career is all about building holistic systems. And so that's what we really tried to do at the BFM Fund is we have a traditional venture capital fund that has to answer to traditional venture capital metrics, and we try really hard to create representation, but there are still limitations on who we can invest in, how we can invest, right, dictated by those traditional parameters. And so as a firm, we built in a lot of these initiatives because we truly believe that entrepreneurship can be a pathway to economic development. And so that, like, is the undercurrent of all of the themes of our initiatives. So the first one is the Emerge Initiative. And we launched that actually in 2021 in partnership with a nonprofit in Oregon. And what we do is we help concept stage companies that are led by BIPOC founders to be able to access friends and family capital through non-dilutive grant funding that we give. Because oftentimes what we see is if we believe that entrepreneurship is a pathway to economic development, but there's no like on-ramp into entrepreneurship, then that's hard, right? Like we invest from the fund at a little bit of a seed stage, but that's still later than when you have the idea and you're doing customer discovery, you're just trying to get into market, show you have traction, which is what's needed to be able to get investment. And so we have these series of initiatives, including the Emerge Initiative, that allow for more people to be able to get into entrepreneurship to then explore if that's a pathway for them. So we launched that in Oregon. We're actually, as a fund, co-located in Oregon and Virginia now. And so we have also started to expand that program across to Virginia, and we're actually trying to open it up more nationwide. So we're looking at partners. So this is also, if you're listening in the audience and you run a nonprofit or any other type of organization that supports entrepreneurs, that you want to partner with the BFM Fund and bring the Emerge Initiative, that's something that we can do. We like to partner with local partners to ensure that we have localized knowledge. That's really important to us, right? Like we wouldn't want someone coming into our community and telling us how to do things. So we try not to do things with like, you know, like in that way. So if there are any local, community organizations, nonprofits that want to bring the Emerge Initiative, we're happy to talk about that and partner. If there's entrepreneurs that see that need, happy to connect. So that's one of our initiatives. The other one focuses on funders because we want founder and funder representation in entrepreneurship. So the funder one, we have a series for women of color who are trying to launch their own fund, fundraise for their first fund, are thinking about getting into venture capital. We want to be able to help get you funded because a lot of times that intersectionality, as you mentioned earlier, of being both a woman and a person of color makes it so difficult for you to fundraise. I feel like I definitely know that firsthand. It's taken me many, many years to establish myself slowly. And there's many more hurdles that you have to jump through. And so we try and get some of those hurdles, you know, like at least lowered by connecting with LPs that already have a history of investing in women of color. And then one of the things that we've done, and you mentioned this at the beginning, is that we did a spin-off nonprofit called Venture Partners, where we try and help create a more sustainable, long-term change in venture capital by training women, people of color, people from rural areas without generational wealth, how to break into venture capital, and then we actually help them land their first job.
Wow. It's so needed. I think it's also an intimidating space. I mean, I will say that for me, you know what I mean? It's like, it does, to your point about, you were saying that it's taken you to slowly work up. I think even for me, from the education standpoint of learning the space a bit as I do, you know, to my knowledge that I have to this day, it takes time. It's just a different language because I haven't been working in it my entire career. So I love how you're like, it sounds like you're creating all these like pathways for different people to get in and get in a way that actually sets them up for success with it. And, you know, gives them some time to do that as well.
You know, one of the things that you brought up is something that I like constantly feel as well, is like how convoluted the venture capital space is. Because, and this is like one of our missions with Venture Partners in particular, is that if you want to be a doctor or a lawyer, right? It's not easy, of course. There's many steps. It'll take many years. There's also a socioeconomic link to it. And, you know, there are definitely challenges for different types of people to get into it. But at the foundational level, if you wanted to be a doctor, you could Google how to be a doctor and someone, like, it's very transparent, right? You have to go through a certain number of steps. And then at the end of it, if you have been able to get there, then you are a doctor. Yes. And that's not the same in venture capital. So not only are there all those like socioeconomic links and all of these other challenges and like biases against people, but then also if you Google how do you be a venture capitalist, there's no one answer and there's no transparency in what even being a venture capitalist means. And that's what we're trying to do, is create transparency. So anyone, our belief is that anyone can work in venture capital. We think that it's been intentionally shrouded so that it can continue to be exclusive and continue to be like hierarchical. So only certain classes and certain races and certain genders of people can be in that space. But we don't believe that that is true. Working in venture capital, we have the belief that anyone can do it if they are taught and given the steps and resources and access to it.
Got it. That makes a ton of sense. I love it. It's refreshing to hear, really. And you know, we'll talk about this later, but not an easy road per se to disrupt a space as you've described it. So again, we'll get into that in a bit. But I want to pause for a minute because something that I'm aware of is that you recently got a Bank of America equity investment that's really, you know, from what I read, really set up to help propel what you're doing. So first of all, congratulations on that. I mean, when I read it and then it was actually pointed out to me by Pilar and her team, I read it and I was like, wow, in the midst of everything we've been going on, that we've been going through in society, in, you know, economically, so like the recession that everybody is, you know, saying is happening, is going to happen, so looming recession, just like also the slight volatility that's gone on. So to get that in the midst of all of that seems like quite a feat. So again, congratulations. But can you tell us about anything about that, including how is that going to help propel what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing I want to say is oftentimes on any social media platform or like any kind of news event, we only get to see the end. And so everyone is super excited and they're like, oh, this is amazing that you did this in this time. I want to be clear so that anyone who's listening, especially those who might be, you know, like wanting to go on this journey, if they don't feel like they get it right away, that they don't feel discouraged. So I actually started, I had my first kind of connection to Bank of America, and we started talking seriously about this investment in March of 2022. So it's not something that just like happens, you know, right away. It takes a really long time. And, you know, they're one of many investors, prospective investors that I talked with, which didn't end this way, right? And so I think that is an important like backdrop to put on this, just so that other people, because my goal always is to encourage other people to pursue their dreams. But then when we sensationalize just the endpoint, it gets really discouraging for new people who are just starting off to feel like, well, how come I'm not getting that? Maybe I'm doing something wrong. It's not actually that you're doing something wrong. This takes a while. I actually started fundraising for this fund in 2020, right? And so like, it's been several years that I've been working on this, and even many more years before that, that I've had to establish myself in the venture capital space. So, and we can talk about that for sure, about that journey that led up to this, but your other question around the impact and what this means, I think it's huge. I know that many of the other traditional venture capital funds actually start off with something like this, right? And so all of their investors are people like Bank of America. But for us, because we're, you know, from the ground up and really like a grassroots effort, this was our first time getting an institutional investor on that national scale. When we started off, we had individuals that would say like, you know, we believe in you, we'll invest in you. And it was really just people I knew, and I had, you know, in that journey of establishing myself, that's where I got people that were individuals that were saying, yes, we believe in you. And it took a really long time to that to take into effect for then other people to notice. And then other people started to notice in Oregon, and the state of Oregon decided to step in, and Oregon Sports Angels decided to step in. A year later, you know, like other people like Oregon Community Foundation decided to step in. And then a year later after that, that's when we started to become national and now co-located in Oregon and Virginia. But the evolution takes a really, really long time. For us, it's super exciting because we finally feel like we are getting the national validation for the work that we're doing. And because we find that we have a very impact-driven focus in all of the ways that we operate and run our initiatives. We hope that this funding can now get into the hands of many more founders that are overlooked because our criteria is specifically looking at different types of founders that are often overlooked in the traditional venture capital market.
Got it. That's awesome. And as you can tell from the company name, when you're saying the impact you're creating and it's such a big deal, it means a lot to me. And again, I'm so grateful that you're here sharing it with us. So you've given us that example of Bank of America. Can you, and I should have asked this earlier probably, but can you also give a tangible idea of who's among your portfolio?
Yeah, absolutely. So we currently have 10 companies in our portfolio, and they range, right? Because as I mentioned before, we invest across verticals within the United States. And so, for example, one of our companies is called Year One, and they started off helping individuals from underrepresented backgrounds in engineering be able to connect to corporations. So a lot of times, corporations want to hire diversely, but there's this misnomer of, if I hire diversely, will I give up on quality? And oftentimes it's not that. It's actually you're gaining in quality. Yeah. You know, like companies, because we have this notion that like, hiring diversely is like equating to philanthropy instead of like thinking about like how we're enriching our organization, there's this misnomer. And so Year One helps corporations to be able to show like you're not losing out on quality, because we're actually putting these engineers from underrepresented backgrounds through technical skills and soft skills tests and matching them up with your job description. So you have good, great quality candidates that are from diverse and underrepresented backgrounds into your organization. They're called Year One because from their standpoint, they're two Black men who like went into this field, and you know, the founder actually was going into like the med school route, decided to go into engineering, realized that it's not just about the recruitment of diverse talent, but also the retention of diverse talent. How can we make sure that diverse talent is supported and is able to thrive at these organizations? And so they're called Year One because their whole focus is how do we ensure that in that first year, those individuals don't leave and are actually put on some sort of promotional track so that they're supported, they themselves want to stay. And so they have a whole retention package as well. And so that's something that they do.
Okay.
Another company of ours is called Hude. And Hude is a place in which especially Black women, but you know, the broader BIPOC population can search and find culturally competent doctors. What we find is that particularly in the Black community, there's a lot of medical discrimination. And so, you know, what she found was that, there's many other platforms, but actually the supply versus demand is pretty low. So only a very, very small segment of the current medical profession is Black. And so, but there's a huge population of Black patients that need to be served. So actually she connects them with Black and culturally competent doctors, but also trains non-Black physicians and healthcare workers on how to be culturally competent. And what we really liked about her was it wasn't just a DEI training. And while I think DEI trainings are really good for the awareness, sometimes it doesn't help with the skill set. So like what I mean by that is her first pilot was with dermatologists, and she noticed that dermatologists are trained in medical school on white skin or white mannequins. And so no matter how aware you are of like different discriminatory practices, if you literally don't have the skills to identify melanoma on dark skin, there's nothing you can do about that, right? And so she partnered with Vaseline to train dermatologists on how to identify melanoma and other disease manifestations in darker skin. And that's what we really liked about her, is like a skill-based training so that you can be different now that you want to be different.
Right. This is so awesome when you're talking about it. It's literally, I feel so excited about it because again, it's not just like, oh yeah, you have some cool idea to make a widget and you're going to sell 50 million widgets. It's like the companies are truly creating that ripple effect it's something that means something that they're, I mean, that sounds mean, like I'm saying that a widget doesn't mean something, but again, just that ability to truly create that impact to help the people that are going to be, you know, touch that brand. So, absolutely. Wow. That's fantastic. So folks, I did read about that. So I don't know where, but I read about that element about dermatology and how it is so, there's so much, I want to say like underrepresentation and misunderstanding and, you know, just because of the, you know, again, like seeing that on lighter skin versus dark skin.
Absolutely. And one thing that I do want to point out, because a lot of times people who hear about this fund are like, oh, you invest in Black entrepreneurs who work for the within the Black community. And while some of the you know, projects I just described do help the Black community, what we invest in is companies that are led by Black founders. Mm-hmm. They can work, you know, they can impact any, as long as they have some sort of social, environmental, or economic impact, then we will consider them, right? So like there's other companies doing like Renewable that does closed loop solutions, that's upcycling food waste into a product that other farmers and agriculture producers want. So like that is an impact for a different community, but it's still a very environmental and economical impact.
Yeah, definitely. And the one I was thinking that I caught on your site was the one with Allison Felix, if I'm
correct.
Can you talk about that one?
Yeah. So Allison Felix, for those of you who don't know, is a super decorated veteran of, you know, within the track and field space. And she has won so many awards and medals, gold medals at the Olympics, you know, quite a feat. But she was actually represented by Nike. And when she got pregnant, they let her know that there was going to be a reduction in her contract. And she realized there was no maternity protection. And a lot of people are like, oh, well, that makes sense, right? She wouldn't be able to run. She actually came back after giving birth and then won another gold medal. So, you know, there's no link there between a lot of times people equate athletic careers with that, but there's actually no link between any career and a woman having a child and her ability to perform after having that child, right? And so her point was that there needs to be maternity protections, and they went back and forth, and eventually she ended up leaving. They now have maternity protections for all of their other employees, but that was as a result of her. She actually then went on, after she left Nike, realized like she needed to figure out what she was going to do and who she, like if she wanted to be represented by someone. She ended up going and moving on to Athleta, but realized in that time that there was a huge gap in the market of shoes being made by women for women. So a lot of times these larger corporations, what they'll do for women's shoes is they'll just have a male shoe and then they'll just resize it for women. But the inherent shape of the foot and everything about a foot is different when you think of like the considerations for women versus men. And so she actually created a shoe. She and other women created a shoe that was baseline for a woman's foot. And then, you know, created a shoe around that. And so it's such an incredible story, just in terms of like how she was able to utilize her career to then create impact. And it's really, really great to see that we've been able to support her. It's so interesting that I think she highlights for us that discrepancy, even being a celebrity, even being in the news for all of her accomplishments. When she and Wes and Darren were creating Saish, they were having a really hard time getting capitalized. And so it's still there, like that bias is still there, and the inability to see beyond like the very narrow square of what people usually invest in is so present. And we saw that with Saish, even with having like so much media about them. And so we were really happy to be able to support them in those early days.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for telling that story.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah, I know.
So you also talked about a little bit ago, you were talking about your evolution, which I find really fascinating from what I know is, again, you've got your master's in social work, if I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
and your MBA. You had a variety of work history. You were in New York City, and now you're, which is so diverse, and now you're in Portland, where it's not really known for that, like, overwhelming diversity in the area. So can you, for us to understand, again, even the time that it's taken you to get to where you are, can you talk through that a bit and share with people your evolution and how you've literally come to make this your life's work, is creating that impact in this world and for other people? I'm fascinated and want to hear it myself.
Of course, yeah. So I think one of the things that is important to me, and we talked earlier about how, like, your demographic identities tend to shape your realities and how you're received by the world and what you believe are problems and solutions. For me, something that's really important to me is that I'm a first generation immigrant to this country. And so I moved here with my parents, and was the first one in my family to then be raised in the United States. And because of that, I think I always felt isolated and alienated from a lot of different communities, because I was never really, like, American enough. I was never really Indian enough. And I think at some point in my life, my parents moved us to Connecticut, and I realized, like, how very different we were from, like, a very suburban town that was super wealthy and super white. You know, like, we really stood out, and it took me a lot of years to figure out, like, the social norms and kind of blend in and, like, make a life. And I think for me, I've always utilized that, like, early childhood experience of always feeling alienated and different to try and understand people from a more holistic perspective. I think my master's in social work certainly highlighted something that was already there. And I worked with a lot of Black and Latino families in New York City and Hunts Point in particular. And I really loved being a school social worker in that area. And what I found is, when people see Hunts Point in particular, they find that to be an area of, like, low socioeconomic development, low literacy rates, low graduation rates. And factually, those are all true, like, on paper. But if you work and live among that community, I think what at least I saw was this huge aptitude for small business ownership, because there were no resources coming in from the outside. And so because of that, then the people of that community had to figure out how to live. And oftentimes that was by selling and trading goods among each other. And, like, when we think about, like, what entrepreneurship is and what small business ownership is, that is it, right? But we don't call them entrepreneurs or founders. They don't call themselves entrepreneurs or founders. They're not put into the conversations of entrepreneurs and founders. And so I was very cognizant of that, and, like, always seeing a certain group of people in a negative stereotypical light, instead of seeing, like, well, are there actually things, while one thing may be true, are there things that we could learn from that community? And I think that is what I've always grown up with, is, especially even, like, my own parents are really, really smart, but because they have accents, and especially when they came to this country, pronounced things differently, were not taken seriously, were overlooked, were discriminated against. And it's like, while one thing is true, another thing can also be true, that they can be smart and they can be someone that you can learn from. And so I think I took that over and over again. When I ended up coming into Oregon, my wife and I moved because of some educational pursuits, and we had left the formal practice. She was a high school teacher, I was an elementary school social worker. We left those formal practices and then went and got our MBA, and she got her law degree as well in Oregon.
Oh, okay.
So okay. That's what brought us there.
That's where I was reading your background. I was like, wait a second, where did Oregon come from? So that makes a ton of sense.
I think my wife and I have always been super open to change and wanting to amplify or impact the most we can. And we saw this opportunity to be able to go to Oregon. And we thought, like, great, let's go. And we have this personality where we don't fully think things through, which actually in hindsight is probably best, because a lot of times when I talk with people who want to start their own business or want to do something and haven't, it's because they are like, well, I don't know, step 37 and 38. And I don't, like, you're never going to know. And it's probably, even if you plan out all the steps, it's going to like go awry in many of those steps. And so I think our personality of not fully thinking things through has helped us to just like launch into things and then face the hardships as they come, right?
I just couldn't agree with you more. It is. I do think sometimes we can get into this like paralysis analysis. And, you know, I have this thing I talk about. I actually have a refrigerator magnet, and I'm looking because it's on the refrigerator. Now I've had it for decades. And it says that sometimes you just have to like jump and build your wing on the way down. And I really believe in that, because even if I'm not a human parent, however, if I was, and I hear so many people who, you know, do have children, and it's like, you know, you're never ready, right? You're never ready, 100,000% ready. So I think it's a great thing, especially to share with the audience, is that if you're wanting to start your own business, if you're wanting to, whatever the thing is, sometimes you know, there enough information is enough to jump, whether it's you're going to move across country, which we did do. But the other thing I thought was kind of interesting was when I was thinking about the fact that you're, again, this is from my perception, that you're doing this work with a foundation in Oregon, in Portland, Oregon, I actually, at first, my brain went to, that's interesting because it's not as diverse as New York City. But then I actually thought about it and I was like, well, actually, maybe that's a really great thing, because there aren't as many people of color, but the people of color who are on the ground there and do want to do these things, they now have this opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, it was really, really challenging coming to Oregon. And like, it's so crazy to say, but we actually never felt our color more than when we went to Oregon, right? Because there was just like such a lack of generational diversity as opposed to the East Coast. And I think also like parts of California have generational diversity. I hear that a lot from people who grew up in San Francisco or LA. But Oregon in particular, you know, actually by legislation didn't have diversity and then doesn't have like diversity. And I think... And it's just like, because of that, I think there's just like an ecosystem that is so ripe for disruption, and an ecosystem, and thankfully the people, particularly in Portland, but now we're seeing people outside of Portland as well, want to create opportunities for diversity, but don't have the foundation or framework. And so then it's actually helpful for more people who want to make a difference to be able to rise up, be in positions of leadership, and to be able to help facilitate that. It's definitely difficult work, for sure. Sometimes you feel like you're railing against a system that's been there for generations. But I think there's enough people that support us that we keep going. And to your point, I think the impact is far greater in places where there's not that foundation, so that many more people who have never even thought of going into entrepreneurship now can see themselves going into entrepreneurship. That's the same thing actually now for us in Virginia. Virginia, of course, is way more diverse. I think Oregon, you know, might be a little bit of a base, right? But you know, Virginia is, of course, way more diverse. But actually, historically, entrepreneurship in the BIPOC community hasn't been at like the same level. And so it's really great to now be co-located and to be able to do programs in both areas.
Yeah, absolutely. As you were saying that, just the thought came to me, and I clearly did not invent this, but just that saying about either you're part of the solution or you're part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you have an area such as Portland, such as there's other places in the country as well that lack diversity, it's like this stuff is so critical. This type of work is so critical, because if not, we're just part of the problem, and that's going to continue for generations to come. So again, like I just I'm so excited and just honestly grateful. I don't even live there, obviously, but but I the work you're doing, to your point, is not easy. And I said this earlier, it's not easy to lead in a space that, you're disrupting. And for a different reason, I was thinking about this earlier this morning. When you're a disruptor of status quo, a lot of times that status quo is benefiting certain people. And so when you are a disruptor, to your point, you get a lot of that, you encounter a lot of that pushback, the resistance, because it's threatening what has been somebody's norm and what is beneficial to some people. So, I think it's not easy, but when you're wired that way, it's like there's really no other way to be. And so, as you can probably tell, and me saying this, I can identify in certain ways of that. But I, and so, but as you are leading in this space, and as people are hearing it, because I think there's a lot of people that I've cultivated this community, who believe in this as well, and who are working to have impact like this as well. So can you talk a bit about your leadership style, and how do you handle those moments where you continue to get that disruption? Or, because how do you stay fueled and focused in the midst of doing really hard work going against like the grain, so to say?
That is such a nuanced question. And day by day, I feel like I have different answers because some days I'm like really energized and I'm like, let's think of the long-term goal and, like some win happens and I'm like, okay, this is validation. And other days I feel super discouraged, and I would say like on a weekly basis, I have days where I feel super discouraged because I am reeling against a system, as you pointed out, that is very beneficial for many people to stay the same, but it's not beneficial for the majority of people for it to stay the same. And so, and because venture capital is so convoluted still, and we are creating these initiatives so many more people can join the fight with us, I think as it stands presently, there are not that many people. Like I was the first woman of color to launch a fund in Oregon. And I am also the last woman of color to launch a fund in the traditional venture capital space in Oregon, right? It's been like 3 years and there haven't been more people. I've been so excited that through the BFM Fund, many more women of color have stepped in and are taking leadership positions. I hope that then matriculates into them launching their own funds or taking leadership funds positions in this fund, right? But it's sometimes really discouraging to me to constantly be the only one. I think some other individuals might thrive on that to feel like, oh, well, I'm getting a lot of notoriety. But for me, it feels really lonely. And I would like actually a lot more people fighting the fight with me. That's just like who I am and that's my personality. And so I think that's what's prompted me to make all these initiatives is like, well, if it's not organically happening, that just me being in the space naturally like creates like or removes barriers for other people to be in the space. Clearly that is not the case, right? That's not the reality. Then we need to, as you're saying, be part of the solution and actively pursue other ways that more people can come in. How I like create some semblance of like the ability to keep going. One, I think surrounding yourself with a team that has the same goals, not necessarily the same way of getting there, because different ways of getting there facilitate innovation and through diversity in that. So I think my team and I are very different from one another. We have a lot of conflict sometimes, which is great, right? Because then we get to solutions that are better than any one person could have thought of. But our goals are the same. And so they remind me all the time when I'm discouraged that everything's going to be okay. I think the other thing is a lot of people don't think about this. When you're fighting a huge fight in your professional life, your personal life has to be really, really solid. And so for me, I chose a partner who and maybe I didn't know this while selecting my partner, but it ended up that my wife is so, so supportive of me as a person. And I think a lot of times people are supportive of other people until they continuously hit roadblocks. And then they are also like, well, maybe this isn't meant for you, right? And that only fuels your own thought of like, maybe this isn't meant for you. My wife has been so, so supportive in the lows to constantly remind me every day, like, this is why you're doing this. This is the impact that you wanted to make. You are making that impact. It's just taking a lot longer to see this global manifestation you want to see, right? But like, here are small ways that you are able to see the impact that you're making, even just in the employment of other people. Now let's think about the founders that you're working with. Let's think about the companies that they're creating. And so I think having that constant reminder in my personal life and that grounding and that support when things aren't going well is really, really critically important. Yeah. So I definitely don't think I could do it without. And then I think the third thing is stepping away a little bit. So for me, actually, that's why I'm co-located in Oregon and Virginia. That way I can take physical space away from the areas that I'm actively trying to change. And that really nourishes and helps me, is to just like be in a different space for a little bit and then go back to that space and keep like floating back and forth. I think that really helps me to like get perspective, because I put like 700% into my job and I have a lot of jobs. And so I'm like always working. And so I think getting physical space gives me the ability to work in this ecosystem and that ecosystem and like just get some physical reprieve.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for sharing this part as well, because you know, look, we started this and I'm excited and I'm happy and I'm like, this is awesome work you're doing and you're making all this impact. And I really wanted to pause and show that some of that humanity, some of the realness in, it's really fucking hard what you're doing. Yeah. And I think that if people are listening to this and you're an individual or you represent a company and you're like, wow, I want to somehow contribute to this. I want to see some of this positive disruption to, you know, I want to help it to flourish. There's ways to get involved. And I think that, you know, that's the next thing I'm going to ask you is to share that with people. But, you know, I think with anything that anybody's doing, right, where you're starting something new, you're working against the grain, it's not all rosy. There's a lot, you know, and again, things can take, you get a lot of no's. It's like all of the people, including myself, who have been unemployed over the last several years. And you're like, all the no's that you get and all of that. It does take that diligence and that intentionality of how you're operating your life. How do you keep yourself fueled? Who do the people are that you have in your circle to support you? And so, again, I'm really glad that you shared that with the audience, because I'm sure there's people who in their own walks of life can take from that and say, oh gosh, okay, let me intentionally look at this part of my life. And is that supporting, you know, what I need to, but sorry to tangent there, but I just felt it was really important. But so can you actually speak to, if there's people listening, whether it's an individual or a company person representing a company, what are ways that people could actually get involved in contributing to the impact?
Yeah, absolutely. So first, let me double click on what you just said and say that absolutely for anyone that's listening, that's kind of been on the sidelines of like, I really want to do this, but I don't know how, I don't know when. There is never a right time to start. And also know that you will encounter resistance. You will encounter loneliness from that resistance. You will feel like you're doing great work and it might feel like you're not getting very far. You might also feel like there are people even within your own community, even within your family, that may criticize you for taking a leap into the unknown. The first time you try something, it's super messy. And especially in the equity work, people feel this paralysis of like, if it's not a perfect solution that addresses all racism, then you shouldn't work on it, right? You shouldn't like do it. And I think there's a lot of criticism, even in our own initiatives when we launch them, right? To say like, well, you know, this initiative isn't addressing this. it's going to be messy, right? It's an iterative process, just like anything else. So that first time you do something and you take that leap, it might feel actually really uncomfortable because it might feel like you're not being received by the community you're trying to serve, by the people who are you want to support you. It might feel really, really uncomfortable to be in a vulnerable place, but it's actually that, like, okay, taking that like criticism and being like, okay, what things do I want to keep? What things do I not want to keep? And just actually just iterating it and keep going in that uncomfortability that actually creates that pathway for success. But a lot of people give up before they start. And then even more people give up after that first iteration when they see how messy it is, because we're taught in our educational systems that there's a right answer to everything. And if we don't get to that right answer right away, then that means we're doing it wrong. And so I think that is like my takeaway thought is like, I hope that people from all walks of life with all different passions pursue those passions, because like you mentioned, if you're not part of the solution, if you're not actively part of the solution, you definitely are part of the problem, and you are serving other people whose intentions and benefits don't like align with maybe what you are thinking in terms of like change, whether it's in climate tech, whether it's in education, whether it's in healthcare. No matter what field, there are benefits that don't benefit the whole, but you can do something about that by taking a leap. Specifically in the equity space, there are ways that you can join us. So we're the BFM Fund. If you go to bfm.fund, there are certain initiatives that we have launched, and you can get involved in any of those if you want to help out as a mentor to other founders. If you yourself are a founder, if you're thinking about becoming a founder, if you are a community activist or lead an organization and want us to help create change within your organization or your geographical area, great, let's partner together in that way. If you want to learn more about how to raise your own venture capital fund or break into the venture capital ecosystem, there's a program there for you as well. So I think that page is probably really helpful as a starting point of ways that you can get involved within the BFM fund. If you want to get involved in the general equity space, but aren't sure if the BFM fund is right for you, we're happy to connect you with many other resources. So just email us at info@bfm.fund, and we're happy. That's actually what we do even for founders, right? When we can't specifically support them, we have a whole network of other organizations, nonprofits, accelerators, incubators, universities, other community partners that we can refer out to. So if you want to take that step, whether it's in equity or climate or healthcare, you know, social work, any arena, I hope that you take that step today without knowing that next step. I hope that you take that leap to be part of that solution. And if the BFM Fund can help in any way, please do reach out to us. And I really do appreciate you, Shauna, for being willing to let me share my story.
Oh, thank you so much. I am honored to know you. My brain has been going like crazy about people that I want to connect you with. So I'll make sure to do that after this. We'll put the links and things when we post this. You're truly our unicorn. You're amazing. Thank you on behalf of so many for the work that you and the women who are leading leading with you are doing. I don't even have the words. I like salute you. I just, you know, really, like, really think you're awesome. And Pilar, can't thank you enough for making this introduction.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. And I thank you for also what you're doing, because amplifying voices really creates inspiration for much more action to follow. And so I really thank you for being a catalyst in that change creation.
Oh, thank you. That's awesome. All right, everybody, have an amazing day. You too, Himalaya. Talk to you soon.
Talk soon.